Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome back to another edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive, and once again, the NFL. It's reigning supreme as far as the news and the national sports headlines. The big news that broke about 2 hours ago, the Los Angeles Rams have released running back Todd Gurley. They also released Clay Matthews. That one, not as big as a surprise, but the Ram-Gurley saga comes to an end. This guy was the Offensive Player of the Year in 2017. The Rams made him the highest paid running back in NFL history before the 2018 season. They gave him a four-year, $60 million extension, which included $45 million in guarantees. And at the time, he still had 2 years remaining on his rookie contract. So the Rams took care of Gurley. Because of that, the Rams are going to be hit with a heavy, heavy cost. Now, they did release Gurley with a post-June 1st designation, meaning that the Rams will get to spread that dead money cap charges over the next two seasons. So the Rams will see $5.5 million in cap savings this year. That becomes available on June 2nd. But it's a lot of money. $20 million the Rams are going to have to eat. Now the Rams have cap issues. And really over the past year and a half, they gave a mega deal to Gurley. They gave a mega deal to Jared Goff and Aaron Donald and Brandon Cooks. And then they traded multiple first-round draft picks for Jalen Ramsey. Because of that, the Rams have got to figure out a way to cut costs. Now, I know if you're a Ram fan, this one stings. Todd Gurley's a very likable guy. At one point in time, he was the best running back in the NFL. I do believe those days are behind Todd Gurley. But even if they're not, there is a recipe for success in the NFL, and I assure you that recipe does not include paying your running back top dollars. You're going to see this more and more frequently, I think, in the very near future. Running back, the market for running backs is starting to dip. If you look at the Super Bowl champions over the past 10 years, you take a look at what their running back was making, it's just not a recipe for success to pay these guys large sums of money. It didn't work out for the Jets with Le'Veon Bell. They've tried to get out of that contract. They're not going to be able to. It hasn't worked with the Dallas Cowboys in paying Ezekiel Elliott. It obviously didn't work with the Rams in paying Todd Gurley. I can't sit here and say it didn't work out for the Arizona Cardinals because somehow they turned David Johnson into DeAndre Hopkins. So I guess that worked somewhat. But really, from a production standpoint, David Johnson's been awful. So those big running back contracts do not work. Now, Todd Gurley is free to sign wherever he wants, and I do believe there's a couple of options. I think Miami is very possible. It's a team that has some cap, a team that is spent. I know they just signed Jordan Howard. I don't care. I think Gurley is a fit in Miami, and I also think Tampa Bay. Atlanta has been rumored as well. As far as the Rams are concerned now, they'll have Malcolm Brown and Daryl Henderson, who they drafted out of Memphis last year. He had a handful of injuries, so we really never got to see him. Again, mentioning Clay Matthews, the Rams signed him to a two-year deal worth around $9 million. He got to play in 13 games last year. He had 8 sacks. That was his most since 2014. But again, I believe his better days are behind him as well. This Ram team is going to look completely different. But again, that is the big news out of the NFL as far as rosters are concerned. Todd Gurley, now a free agent, to sign wherever he wants. We'll talk more about this situation later on in the show. It's weird. It was very, very weird. The Ram-Gurley relationship turned the year the Rams went to the Super Bowl. There was a December game against the Chicago Bears. And from that point on, it seemed like both sides just tiptoed around some problems. And I think that there's arthritis in that knee of Gurley. I'm curious to see what his physicals hold in the very near future. Nonetheless, it is a sad day if you're a Ram fan. Some other news coming out of the NFL. New Orleans Saints head coach Sean Payton has tested positive for coronavirus. This is the first big announcement for the virus in the NFL. Payton is 56 years old, the first person in the NFL world known to test positive. He said he didn't feel well this past Sunday. He took the test on Monday, received the results yesterday afternoon, and now he is resting at home. He said he's a little fatigued, but really he's part of the 20% of the cases that have no fever, no cough. He's going to self-quarantine. He put on Twitter today, appreciate the well wishes. I'm feeling better and fortunate to not have any respiratory symptoms. Four more days at home. Hashtag beat COVID. So that's some news with the virus coming out of the NFL. We take a look at Major League Baseball. The Boston Red Sox have had a very forgettable offseason, and it gets even more forgettable. Chris Sale is out for the 2020 season. He will undergo Tommy John surgery. The surgery is going to keep him from pitching this year, which we don't know when this season is going to begin, but recovery usually takes about a year. He's only 30 years old. He's entering the first year of a five-year, $145 million contract. I know that there's some buyer's remorse as far as the Red Sox are concerned with how much they have paid him. He had elbow soreness during spring training at the beginning of the month, and it was the first time he had faced a batter since August. Remember, they shut him down last year. He underwent an MRI back on March 3rd. The results were examined by Red Sox doctors, and this is the determination: Chris Sale will not pitch this year as he undergoes Tommy John surgery. See, all kinds of stuff right now happening in the sports world. Speaking of injuries, we have to jump back over to the NFL for this one. It was breaking earlier today that the Broncos have informed Joe Flacco that he is being released with a failed physical designation. Now, Flacco was placed on the injured reserve halfway through last season. He had a herniated disc in his neck, and now he's an unrestricted free agent. It was a very forgettable season for him with Denver. He was 2-6 as the starting quarterback. He did throw for 1,800 yards, 6 touchdowns. I think he had 5 picks, completed 65% of his passes. He is 35 years old, but it may be the end of the road for Joe Flacco, who again was a Super Bowl MVP during his time with Baltimore. So that's a quick look at what's happening at the national sports front. We do have a good show lined up for you. We are going to talk local sports. Greg Dart, Vice President of USU Eastern, is going to join us over the phone next segment. We'll talk about everything that's happening at the school, including closures. Plus, we'll look at the athletic scene. What does this mean for student-athletes? For every college student athlete, every JUCO athlete participating in spring sports, they will not lose a year of eligibility. But there are some other issues as far as student athletes are concerned, like commencement this year. That has been canceled. We're going to talk to Greg Dart, and then we'll have a Major League Baseball segment as well. Bill Lasky, former pitcher of the San Francisco Giants, he'll join us. I'm itching for some baseball. We should have it right now. Unfortunately, we don't. So that's coming up when we return. It's a Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we're back right after this.
Now, this local Castle Country sports update with Jordan Buscarini from KOAL.
Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. Yesterday, we ran a recap of the Carbon Dino early baseball season review. We'll continue today with Emory High School's baseball squad, as we are still currently suspended due to the ongoing prevention efforts of the COVID-19 virus. At the time of the suspension last week, the Spartans held a record of 2-5. They had taken part in a tournament in Mesquite against schools from Nevada and Southern Utah. They also hosted games against Payson, a Team A from the 5A classification, and Uinta, a team from 4A. In the two wins this season, the Spartans defeated Virgin Valley 6-1. This contest took place in Mesquite, Nevada, and it was junior Luke Stilson who threw a gem for the Spartans as he allowed just one hit while striking out 3. In that contest, senior Bron Gordon continued consistent play at the plate, ending 1-2 with a single and 2 RBIs to go along with a walk. And sophomores Oakley Olden and Riker Jensen each hit in 1 run as the Spartans finished with a season best up to this point, 6 runs. The second win of the season came at home for the Spartans as they topped North Sam Pete after getting off to a slow start, grabbing a 6-5 win. In that victory, sophomore Jace Mangum led the way at the plate as Emory tallied 12 hits and 6 RBIs, which was the team's most potent offensive performance of the season. In that contest, Mangum finished 2 of 3 at the dish with 2 singles, 2 RBIs, and 1 run. 4 other players gathered at least 1 RBI. The majority of Emory's 7 games were played in Mesquite, Nevada, and we had a recent interview with manager Rob Smith, who was in year number 3. He talked about the way his team performed at the Nevada tournament.
There was a lot of positives, a couple negatives. Positives going forward, hey, you got to turn the page, go forward, continue to work on the things that we've been working on. You know, the negatives, we got to throw strikes, got to put the ball in play when we have runners in scoring position.
On the mound so far this season, Emory has been led by Trevin Wakefield and Luke Stilson, who have both recorded 1 win on the mound. Those are also the 2 strikeout leaders for Emory. Wakefield has fanned 6 batters, while Stilson has fanned 5. Coach Smith continued by talking about the early season success he saw on the pitcher's mound from his team.
Threw a 1-hitter with 2 walks is all, and that really set the tone for us. Oakley Alton threw really well as well. He pounded the zone, gave us a chance. We had a couple errors and a couple walks there in the last inning. Riker threw well for the most part. Cove Johansson threw well. Trevin threw well. Just got to get those last three dialed in the strike zone, and I think we'll be fine.
At the break, current offensive leaders include Tyler Stilson, who has a .500 batting average. Jace Mangum would be second on the team with a .429. The RBI leaders include Riker Jensen, who has 3, while Brun Gordon, Oakley Alton, and Jace Mangum have each brought in 2 runs. On base percentage, Jace Mangum has a .556 percentage leading the team, followed by Tyler Stilson's .500. With 7 games in the book, you can visit CastleCountryRadio.com for a complete recap of each game and the current individual season stats for the Spartans. We will continue to give you the spring sports early season recaps on how teams have fared so far. It has been announced that the NJCAA has suspended the spring sports season. Tomorrow, we'll recap the USU Eastern baseball team, and then we'll move into softball. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
What's happening on the local sports front? Not a lot right now. Seriously, not a lot going on. Right now, the high school sports season is still suspended. We do know that the junior college season has been canceled. We're talking about the spring sports. Last week around this time, we were joined by Coach Scott Mattson, athletic director at USU Eastern. He gave us the official announcement and the rundown of everything that was being discussed. A couple of days later, the NJCAA had announced that the entire spring sports season was canceled. What does that mean for USU Eastern, its students, and its athletes? Well, we're going to talk to Vice President Greg Dart, who is joining us right now over the phone. Greg, is always a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
I know it's kind of a crazy time right now at USU Eastern. There's been a lot of developments. And about a week ago, we talked to Coach Scott Mattson, athletic director, on Friday, and he says, okay, everything's just suspended at the moment. Boy, it wasn't, but 48 hours later, everything was canceled and the BDAC was closed. And so I know it's a very fluid situation. It goes beyond sports. It also has affected academics. But it seems like everything is changing by the day. That's what it seems like anyways.
I think that's for sure, and even more than that, by the hour, that as different decisions are made throughout the state, throughout the country, it's impacting our students, our student athletes, everyone. And so we as an institution have been making decisions and then making them publicly known as quickly as we can. And so changing by the day is not an overstatement at all, and even multiple times a day there have been changes.
Well, let's start by talking about some of the things on campus that have closed to the public. I know the Prehistoric Museum is closed. Most recently, we got word from, again, Athletic Director Scott Mattson that the BDAC has been closed as well. So there are a variety of options that are open to the public that have closed as far as USU Eastern is concerned.
Yeah, we've always prided ourselves as being a big part of this community. And at this point, with some of the things that have come from the health department and from the governor, we've just felt the need to close most of our public-facing areas on campus. You mentioned the Prehistoric Museum, the BDAC, the Geary Event Center. You know, our campus right now is really just operating to serve the needs of our students. And so while the public mission has always been a big part of our mission, it's really suspended right now as there have been all these restrictions put in place. And we're doing it because, you know, we want to be good citizens. We want to make sure that public health is the number one priority, health and safety. And so we're really just asking the public to understand that these changes are temporary, and as soon as they're lifted, we'll be welcoming them back to campus.
Is there a timetable that's been put in place to maybe reevaluate some of these things reopening, or is it kind of just a by-the-day type deal?
So the university has made the decision yesterday that all events through May 1st are canceled, and I think that for now, that's the time frame that we're working on, understanding that any events for the remainder of March and all of April, as well as those facilities that I talked about, will remain closed. But that is something that's evaluated on a regular basis. Our university on a weekly basis is making determinations on whether any of those things would be extended. But we're working with the understanding that we'll probably be working through May 1st. And so, of course, that when that came down yesterday, that meant in conjunction with all the Utah System of Higher Education institutions across the state, that commencement for this year will be canceled.
It's obviously sad. I know that there were universities throughout the state of Utah talking about commencements being canceled, and I know we've had that conversation with Superintendent Lance Hatch as well as far as graduation for high school students, and I don't believe anything officially has been announced yet from the high school level. But nonetheless, a sad time at USU Eastern when you have to tell these kids, sorry, there's no ceremony to commemorate your accomplishments here at USU Eastern.
Yeah, it's just unprecedented times call for unprecedented measures, and that's where we're at. But having said that, we still want to do something to honor and celebrate those graduates, and so we're working on that now, what that might look like, if it's something at a later time, if we're still doing something, but just virtually at that time. And so we will have more information as we develop those plans. Because, you know, even though we have to cancel that one event, it does not cancel all the work that these students have put in over the years to get to that kind of crowning achievement. And so we are looking forward for some ideas on how to celebrate those students, but those are tough decisions.
And again, our guest right now is USU Eastern Vice President Greg Dart. Greg, let's move over to athletics and talk about some of the changes there. Obviously, the NJCAA had made the announcement that there's no more spring sports competitions and really not even a basketball championship this season. Those things have been canceled. You talk about unprecedented times. I know this follows what the NCAA decided to do as well. Just a bizarre time to be in. And you really feel for the athletics department at USU Eastern because we had two first-year head coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely an unprecedented time. The fact that we had just started our spring sports, our spring schedules in things like baseball and softball. Rodeo, you know, is both the fall and spring, but they had just started back up their spring competition schedule. And then they came to a halt. That's a different situation than we've ever been in. Our student athletes had been preparing for this portion of the year, and it was just all of a sudden over. And that's, you know, that's not to say anything for our fall sports that usually have a spring practice or a scrimmage schedule. And so those were all canceled as well. And so it really is the time that I don't think any of us could have ever envisioned a few months ago.
With that being said, two first-year head coaches at both baseball and softball. Boy, you want to talk about a crazy time for these guys. I know they're both kids, basically, getting going in their careers as coaches, and this is their first season.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is is pretty amazing about both of them, in Shelby Shirtless and in Kirk Haney, our baseball coach, that they've just kind of rolled with the punches. And I think that's all you could do at this point. They had really promising young teams as well for first-year coaches, and we're seeing some success early on, and then it came to a screeching halt. But they've got that fire. They've wanted to continue. At first, it was just a suspension of play. We didn't know for sure if it would, how long it would last. And then when the season was canceled, of course, that raises all sorts of other questions for coaches and student athletes about years of eligibility and pieces like that. And then just students who that academically have moved on from the institution, would they still come back and compete? And so you've got these two first-year head coaches grappling with questions that even our most veteran coaches have never had to deal with, and they're doing a tremendous job.
I know that the eligibility issue was something that I'm sure you monitored extremely close. I know Coach Madsen had said that that was something he was curious to see how it would all play out. And it looks as if everyone that was participating in the spring sports, they're not going to lose a season of eligibility, correct?
That is correct. So the NJCAA has been very on top of that and been proactive in communicating that. And those student athletes will have an additional year of eligibility, really just getting back this year that they never really had.
And you had mentioned to me off the cuff that still it hasn't hampered recruiting. There are still ways that you can sign letters of intent, and there are still ways you can recruit even though you have to practice social distancing.
Yeah, so it has changed recruiting significantly. Yeah, I think we all, when we think of recruiting of student athletes, you think of the in the home meeting with the parent and the student athlete and talking about your vision for him or her as part of your team. Well, those days are gone, but still able to do that via video conferencing, Skyping, FaceTiming, as well as phone, text, video sharing, and we still are moving forward, signing letters of intent for next year, and our coaches are just recruiting virtually a lot more than they have in the past, even though that's always been a big part of the way that we recruit.
Definitely unique times, to say the least. A lot going on right now at USU Eastern. Again, Vice President Greg Dart, our guest. Greg, is there anything else you'd like to add that we haven't touched on yet?
The only thing that I would say is that it really is daily, hourly, that there are changes. And so we would ask that everyone monitor our social media and our website, because that's where you'll get the most up-to-date information. If you have questions, there are phone numbers. The university is still open. We are still doing business. We are just doing it a little bit differently than we've done in the past. So I do want to make clear that that we, as part of the Utah System of Higher Education, have been moving as one body. A lot of decisions, including commencement yesterday, were made with everyone in conjunction. And so the cooperation within the system of higher education, within Utah State University, as a statewide system, has been tremendous. But the thing that's really been heartening is just the response of our students and the community, that they understand that we're in a difficult situation. And the support has been tremendous. And we live in an amazing community. We have amazing students. And I just want to say thank you to them.
Greg Dart, always a pleasure to get you on to speak about what's happening at USU Eastern. I definitely appreciate the time. And I'm sure we'll be talking again real soon with more updates.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. And don't hesitate to reach out if there's any questions you have.
Absolutely. Thank you again, Greg.
Thank you.
It's an update on what's happening with USU Eastern. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to move over to the national sports scene. How about a baseball conversation? Everything's been NFL over the last few days. Let's break from the NFL for a moment. Bill Lasky will join us to talk Major League Baseball. That's coming up next when we return.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. from the Auto Farm Studios. We still have plenty of other sports topics going on in the national scene, not just NFL. Now, we may have to get creative if we want to talk Major League Baseball, but every week we're joined by Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, who also works with the San Francisco Giants. He joins us to talk baseball. And Bill, I know right now for you in San Francisco, there's not a whole lot going on other than, maybe having some abstract conversations about the game, huh?
I would believe so. I'm here, not really quarantined, but state of California is everybody in place, shelter in place, and the best thing to do is just be safe. My two big dogs, my Bernese Mountain Dogs, can't understand why I'm home all day, but they're sure getting enough walks and play time, and I think you just got to huddle with your family and friends, and at this time, during the month of March and going into April, try to get this curve to settle down and try to get back to normal behavior sooner than later.
What are some of the big topics, Bill, that you have seen floated around Major League Baseball? Maybe some of the talk even behind the scenes that we haven't really seen because the NFL has really dominated the national headlines over the last little while. What's the thought process behind where the league is heading?
Well, I tell you, the biggest news coming out of the San Francisco Giants, and I don't think you know it, they're talking about signing Yasiel Puig right now. They're talking about bringing him to camp when it opens. No one has really reached out to him. I know we talked a couple weeks ago that he was still on the free agent market, and now the Giants are talking about having interest with him. They pretty much looked at all their minor leaguers through spring training, and they just don't have that right-handed bat that could help them in the lineup when the baseball season starts. And I think that's going to be a serious discussion moving forward, hopefully, through the month of April when they get baseball going again in spring training. And they're talking possibly the middle of May, beginning of June, baseball season. And you know what? Everybody's guessing right now. There's nothing in the works. Everybody's pretty much just subsiding and getting players home now. They have the spring training sites open. But, of course, practicing one-on-ones and things like that. But I think everybody is pretty much shelter in place.
I'm glad you bring up Yasiel Puig. Here's a very interesting player, and you've been around the game for so long. Can you recall the last time we saw a player fall from grace this fast? And I know that sports are a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately deal, so maybe people have forgot about the talk, but if you go back to 2013, Bill, there was a legitimate conversation. Would you rather have Yasiel Puig, or would you rather have Mike Trout? I remember that conversation. It really did exist. It sounds asinine now, but I promise that was a real conversation that people were having because here's a guy in Puig that had 27 hits in his first 15 games. And if you go back and look at the historical significance behind that, he tied Joe DiMaggio and Terry Pendleton for second most all time for most hits in their first 15 games. That's how historical Puig was in 2013. And then he was a part of a team that went to back-to-back World Series. So I know that this guy can play. You know this guy can play. The question becomes, at what point is it so low risk, high reward that you bite on it? And I think that's maybe where the Giants are at right now. Why not?
Exactly. And there's no reason why not. The brouhahas with Madison Bumgarner and him. Madison's now with the D-backs. Of course, the leftovers with Buster Posey, Crawford, Belt, and now Pence and Pablo back. These were wars when the Giants played the Dodgers, when Madison and Puig were going at each other. But I do remember that when they were comparing him to Michael Trout. And some of the comparisons were right on. The guy's got one of the strongest arms in baseball. I remember him compared to Dave Parker, the size of these guys. And his bat, hitting right-handers better than left-handers. But you're right. He came from the top of the mountain, and he fell straight down real fast. The couple of years when he was a Dodger, no doubt I thought he was going to be a Dodger for the rest of his career. And the numbers started proceeding downward. He didn't get much playing time. And sure enough, they got rid of him. I thought he was doing real well with Cincinnati, too, when he went to the Reds. And that kind of, the flavor in the Reds kind of dissipated. So, you know, here's a guy that, give him a shot. Why not? You know, he's not going to get but the minimum. And he's probably looking for a team just to come and try to get back into Major League Baseball. And why not bring him in the NL West? A lot of teams know him. A lot of teams have watched him play with the Dodgers. And right now the Giants are looking for a right-hand power hitter. And they just don't have anything coming to fashion right now. And once this opens up, I can see him being a Giant for the first couple weeks, 2-3 weeks, and seeing what he's got left in the tank.
If I was to tell you that the story of Yasiel Puig is eerily similar in my mind to Gary Sheffield, is that a fair comparison?
That's a great comparison because that's how Sheffield was for many years. Top of the line, top of hitter. Swing path was just unbelievable. The first thing I remember about Sheffield was the swagger in his bat, always swinging, you know, always moving before he swung. But, boy, he had the power. When he was on, he was one of the most fierce hitters in the lineup. And I think Puig's the same way. He put him down in the order a little bit. Maybe he gets hot down there. He can definitely drive a ball out of the ballpark. Again, what is he going to bring into the clubhouse? What is the nature of the beast? Is he a kind of guy that you can kind of compare him to in a clubhouse? Is he comparable to a guy that can come into a clubhouse and fit in? Or is he going to be that piece that's going to be the guy that you don't want in there? Don't forget, Gabe Kapler coming in with a whole bunch of new coaches that really aren't big league coaches. Ronnie Wotus is about the only one that's got experience there. And they're trying to build a culture and bringing a positiveness into the locker room. So the Giants are kind of that piece that you might just want to see him in that lineup. You might give him that opportunity. They're looking at everything that they can do to build a winner. And if Puig's that guy and you bring him in for a year and give him that test, you know what? Why not? You know, there's other players also that still haven't found a team either. So I'm sure with this downtime, they're looking at every analytics on every player that they could pick up. And even the guys they have are, do we want them? Do we not want them? Major League Baseball, the business side, you know it's operating. It's just not operating where people know what they're doing.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the most interesting story of all, right? If you give these front offices that do employ some of the best minds in baseball and some of the best minds regarding numbers, and you give them an additional 2 months to put a team together before we begin the season in June, boy, that's fascinating, isn't it?
It is, and if they're not doing it, then they need to wake up because this is the time where you can, you know, get on Skype and have a bunch of different coaches in on a conference call and literally figure out what you want to do. Here's our roster. And you know what? Washington Nationals started doing and getting rid of Hunter Strickland and Hernandez. That kind of blew me away. I didn't think baseball was operating back then. Sure enough, they released both of them. So you know the mindset of these coaches as well as front offices. All the scouts are not working right now. I look at down the path. Is there going to be a June draft? How are these college players going to be looked at when there's no season? How is this going to translate into the future? So there's a lot of things, not just in baseball, but in sport. We talked briefly about the NFL moving forward and all the different name changes and free agents being signed. They're looking forward to it. I'm sure NBA, NHL, I'm sure all the sports, the front offices are looking to see what they get rid of, how are we going to move on, and things like that are magnified. But this is the time I would believe Major League Baseball front offices are getting a scope on their entire organization.
Again, Bill Lasky, our guest right now as we talk Major League Baseball. Bill, I'll throw this interesting conversation out there to you. You talk about some of the free agents and some of the guys that will get additional looks now that there is an extended period of time. We've talked about Yasiel Puig, a guy that you're probably familiar with. Scooter Gennett is still a free agent. Addison Russell, I know that there's been some issues regarding Addison Russell, but he's still a free agent. If we go into the outfield, you can look at a guy like Melky Cabrera. He's a free agent. Mark Trumbo. And so I always start thinking, boy, if there was an expansion team coming in this year, you could be pretty decent with the amount of quality free agents that I believe still have something to offer to the game that are available. And I know they're available for one reason or another, but still, that's a fun conversation to go over.
That would be a great one. Make a new city, put a new team up, and see what you have, because I'm sure there's a lot of pitchers out there that we haven't even talked about. There probably is a whole team that you could unify and put in a big league ready team. I'm just stumped by some of those names that you threw out at me that they're not at a big league camp as a non-roster player getting an opportunity, because there's some talent right there in every one of those players. Again, time passes, guys get pushed away. Next thing you know, they retire, and they probably have a couple more years in them. And we talk so many times about the youth, about how many players that are trying to push to get to the big league level. And guys are ready or guys aren't ready. But they think that by pushing guys through AA and AAA so fast and giving them a shot, that's where the analytics all come into it. And how many years will they be that good at the big league level? Should they be pushed that fast? Baseball's going to have a big picture here down the road and what we can do and how we're going to manage this. And you talked about June 1st as a potential date. What is it going to be, a 100-game season, 80-game season? And if it comes down to that, every team, once they get hot, they can get into the playoffs. So there really isn't one big team that's going to dominate when you look at a less-game season. And that's probably what they're looking at right now if, in fact, they're looking at a June 1st, May 15th start, something of that magnitude.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because, again, you were a major league pitcher, Bill, for several seasons. And so if someone came to you and they said, we're going to have a 100-game season, do you change your approach at all? Because it's no longer a marathon. At that point, it's a sprint, right? So how does that change the pitching aspect of the game of baseball if we were to go to an 80 to 100-game season?
And you go back to how many pitches most of these guys had already before it got shut down. Some of the starters were in their 70 pitches, so their arms were ramping up. How long is it going to take them to get back 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the season starts? I think more teams will want the season to start quicker and get these guys on a path where you can use more middle guys, long guys, and get out there and try to win as many games as you can, because that's going to be it. It's going to be a sprint. We don't want to lose three or four games in a row. You have to dominate early to get a jump, because you don't have that many games. 162-game schedule is off the board. If we're looking at 100 games, that's a lot of games that you can get out in front and win 20, 30 games, and you're in a hunt. So it is going to be a different mindset and strategies from all these teams.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting when we finally get off and rolling again. What's Bill Lasky do in his free time? What are you doing right now to stay occupied or at least entertained? I know a lot of these athletes, they play video games, they watch movies. What do you do?
I'm definitely not doing video games. That's one fact. I'm reading a lot more. I'm trying to get knowledge on the game a little bit more. Some great writers out there. The Athletic is definitely a possibility of subscribing there and reading about a lot of different writers across the nation, putting up a lot of different energy while they're sitting at home. A lot of good baseball talk if you get on The Athletic, as well as just watching some old baseball stories and ESPN and, of course, MLB Network, and out here at NBC Bay Area is putting up some different things. And on weekends, I'm still doing some radio with Marty Lurie out here on KNBR, or just trying to fill the air with some good baseball talk, and just trying to stay healthy. You know, I'm up in age a little bit. I'm over the 60-year mark, so I was at the grocery store, and somebody made a remark, aren't you supposed to be at home? And I'm like, real funny. Real funny. So I feel good, healthy-wise, and just trying to stay healthy and eating right and just communicating with my family over the phone. They're all over the nation, and everybody's doing well in my family. Knock on wood that your family doing the same, and the fans out there that listen to you, just trying to stay healthy and stay positive.
That's important.
Best thing to do is get energy, take a walk. Go, just don't sit home and watch TV all day. You have to be creative. You have to do things to make that mind continue to keep working. And talking with you for a little 20 to 30 minutes is a great plus. And I hope your fans out there are listening to radio and just trying to stay positive instead of getting depressed and falling into negative mindset. So I'm hoping your fans love listening to you and me talk, and we can do this more and more. And I just think it's important that you stay ahead. And I think that's the key. Just keep moving forward and get healthy and stay healthy and be positive.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Bill Lasky, again, former big league pitcher, always taking out the time to join us. Bill, thank you so much, and I'm sure we'll talk again real soon.
Always, my friend. Take care.
Always fun to get a baseball conversation going here on Drive Time Sports. We're going to break for just a moment. More coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
Yeah, running down a dream that never would come to me. Running down a dream.
We're back to close out this edition of Drive Time Sports. A couple of minutes left. Let's bring in Travis Anderson to help close it out. Travis, the news in the NFL today, the Rams releasing Todd Gurley. This NFL free agency period has been crazy. A lot of big names that'll have new places next year, new places of employment, new teams. All in all, when you look at the way the Gurley deal went down in Los Angeles, I can't stress this enough. It's just odd, right? The whole thing is just odd considering he was an MVP candidate, offensive player of the year. The Rams get shellacked by the Bears defense, middle of the season, week 11, I think it was, week 11, week 12 against the Bears. And then things changed for Todd Gurley. You and I went to a Sunday night game. We saw it live and in color. They lose to the Philadelphia Eagles. Gurley sits out the remainder of the season. C.J. Anderson comes in. Gurley comes back, has a dynamic game against the Cowboys, goes for over 100 yards, then has four carries against the Saints, and I believe he had 10 carries against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. From that point on, the Rams have continued to say there's nothing wrong with Gurley. He continues to say there's nothing wrong with him. But the production level has not been there, and the explosiveness also has not been there. It's a weird case.
It is weird because you go back to 2017, he was great. He was the best player in football at that time and everything he did. Now we're to this point where the Rams release him, and what, he's 25 years old, and he's a free agent, and it's just weird, like you talked about, how that season, you know, just went wild with Todd Gurley and how he came back against Dallas, looked great, and then from that point on, you know, they said nothing's wrong, but there's got to be more to the story that we're going to eventually find out about.
You would think. Yeah, you would think. I don't know if it's Sean McVay. I don't know who it is. But now let's take a look at the logical spots for Gurley, and I'm hoping that he has a bounce-back year wherever it is he goes. I'm a fan of Todd Gurley. You mentioned it. He's only 25 years old. I believe he earned every bit of that, well, the guaranteed money that he is going to get. $45 million was guaranteed on that contract. I believe he earned every bit of it with what he showed in the first 2 to 3 years in the league. He was dynamic. He was the face of the franchise as they had made the move to Los Angeles. And again, it's the business aspect of things. Looking at the logical landing spots for him, Tampa Bay to me makes perfect sense. They signed Tom Brady. They have Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, O.J. Howard, Cameron Brait. What they don't have is a running back. They finished 25th in the league in rushing last season. You have Ronald Jones.
Yeah.
To me, it's a no-brainer. You have all kinds of cap space. They have room to give Gurley a nice contract. If I'm Tampa Bay, I'm taking a one-year flyer on Todd Gurley.
I'm with you. I think it's a perfect fit. You go to Tampa Bay, you play with Tom Brady, and all those weapons around on the offensive side of the football will make Todd Gurley, you know, a very valuable asset. So, yeah, Tampa Bay's a nice fit.
Next, I would have to say Miami.
Miami is a good choice.
I know that they just gave Jordan Howard a two-year, $10 million deal. I don't care anything about that. They have a lot of cap space. I believe they have $46 million in cap space, right? So it would make perfect sense. Again, as you mentioned, he's 25 years old. To me, that makes perfect sense. And if there is a problem with Gurley's knee, tagging him with Jordan Howard, I think it's a perfect running mate out of the backfield. I think the Dolphins have quietly been one of the best teams in free agency this past season.
They're going to push Buffalo in the East.
I think they will. I really, really do. I'm curious to see what they do at quarterback, but I think the Dolphins have done a lot of great work in this offseason. I like what they're doing. I think Miami is a reasonable spot for him as well. There was talk about Atlanta trying to find a way to acquire Todd Gurley before the Rams released him. Didn't make any sense to me because Atlanta only has about $2 million in cap space. So if they want to bring Gurley back home, back to Georgia, remember that's where he went to college, they're going to have to get creative. He's going to have to take a massive discount. But they did just get rid of Devontae Freeman.
Yeah, Atlanta, I seen that as well. I just don't think that's going to happen, just with the, you know, the structure, the contracts and all that. I think Tampa Bay and Miami, I mean, those are too logical, but I just don't see the Atlanta thing working out unless they get creative.
Let me give you two more teams, and you can tell me if I'm insane here because I have the cap figure sitting in front of me. Indianapolis, for one, I think Indianapolis is a true Super Bowl contender. I really, really do. I like what the Colts have. I like what they have up front. One of the things that Gurley did not have last year in L.A. was a sturdy offensive line.
He has that.
He has that in Indianapolis. I know they have Marlon Mack, but he's on his rookie contract. So you could really, really keep Gurley and Marlon Mack, I think, happy for at least a season. You add Phillip Rivers to it. They have $45 million in cap space. I think Indianapolis could work. And now let me give you the devastating one. What about the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, the Chiefs, the rich get richer. I think Kansas City, like you, the LeSean McCoy thing didn't work out as well as they thought it would. It didn't work out. But yeah, if he goes to Kansas City with Mahomes, I mean, that's just another weapon with that explosive offense. Yeah, that's what they need. So I hope he doesn't go to Kansas City.
I'm telling you, the Chiefs don't have the cap room right now to sign him, but they can really clear it up fast. All they would have to do is release or restructure Sammy Watkins' deal. Sammy Watkins played with Todd Gurley when he was in L.A. Boy, if you pair Gurley with Damian Williams.
Good luck trying to stop that offense.
I think those are all possible landing spots, but to me, I would have to say that Tampa Bay is the front runner to land him at the moment. And I don't know what Gurley has left. I don't think that anybody who signs Gurley is getting a diamond in the rough. I do believe he's damaged goods. I do believe his best days are behind him. Otherwise, he wouldn't be a free agent. You don't let go of franchise-altering players to save $10 million in roster bonuses when they're 25 years old.
Hey, you know something's up.
The Rams know something's up. There's something that went on there. We just don't know what. But it gives us another interesting storyline to follow. Out of time of this edition of Drive Time Sports. Tomorrow we'll be back and we will recap NFL free agency. We'll dedicate the entire show to it. That'll be right here on Drive Time Sports tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We're out.